The title of the talk this evening is called Time in the Discontinuous Universe. Just a light topic for... So where do we begin on this important topic? We're looking at... we're really building a new paradigm for life, and one that is urgently called for, I believe, in this day and age, and one in which I think our human hearts are longing for. And I think it's very important for us to frame it in ways that feel very doable and very assuring and very life-asserting. And I believe that we can get too caught up in the drama of what we're being asked to do and not enough into the heart expression of what it really means to give up our old way of seeing life in a kind of discontinuous sort of substance, substantial sense of permanency and chasing after life towards the pleasures that never seem to adequately allow us to relax or to be content. And is there a way to look at what we've been doing so that we can then realign ourselves into a more noble adventure for ourselves and really enliven life in the process so that it's not the dull thing that most of us know it to be, or the sort of a mundane and habitual way that we live? Is there a way to bring this thing alive within us? And to do so, I think we have to break through some very entrenched ways that we see the world. And this series is sort of looking at the inverted ways that we address the world and see whether, in fact, they're true. Because in the Buddha's words, he's saying that we're intentionally making something that can never be what we believe it to be what we believe it to be. We're making something insubstantial that can't possibly be anything but. We're trying to make it permanent through our thoughts, through our actions, through our intentions. And is it permanent? Is it really that way? Just the willingness to ask that question, the willingness to step forward and to say, let me find out. I just want to know. I don't want to be told or tell myself, because we're not really being told, it's we're telling ourselves lies about this world. Let me just look at it clearly, directly, and see what it is for myself. Is this world the permanent, fixed thing that we believe it to be? And is it possible that the way I am pursuing life, will it give me the satisfaction that I'm craving from it and pursuing it for? A fair question, is that not? And to be able to look and to see whether the world first is as continuous as we think it is and as permanent and as solid, and secondly, whether we're pursuing it in the right direction for the satisfaction that we all yearn. Because if it's not paying off, then instead of just going this way for the next few decades until we die, I think a good cold slap of water might be refreshing, don't you? And step out of this fixed way we perceive and step into something new. Step into a new way. We have to be daring, adventurous, kind of like what we were when we discovered this country. You know, some willingness to go where there's not a secure and known, predictable future for ourselves. But if you look at the stock market these days, our future isn't that predictable anyway, is it? In fact, we've dug ourselves such a hole through the pursuit of these inverted truths i.e. the stock market, that it should be pretty apparent that we're doing something very skewed with our life. It should be very apparent to us. You see? Now, again, the caveat, and I have to say this for each of us, is that when we find ourselves walled off and everybody else moving in a direction that we that isn't working for us, our tendency is to think, well, it's working for them. It's me. It's my problem. I'm the only one that can't find happiness in all of this. And so, because we are prone towards that disposition of self-blame, we hide that because we don't want anyone else to know that we're the only one that can't find happiness in the world. So we put on a pretending face that we have to found it and try to convince others that, in fact, we're along, going along with you as well. Yeah, join the crowd here. We found it as well. But if you scratch just beneath the surface, most of us are desperate because we can't and haven't been able to discover what our heart's longing. And we don't know what else to do. And so we are looking at these inverted truths as a new paradigm shift, as a new way of perceiving life, as a daring, as a courage, as a come on, let's, you know, as the kind of the original frontiers person would take life on in a lustrous kind of way. And now we're walking ourselves into this third illusion, and this third illusion, it gets a little more shattering as we go into these things. And I will also show that how the third illusion, this taking the momentary displays of the world to be continuous. These momentary displays, because the Buddha said there's nothing continuous here. In fact, he talked about in each moment, in a blink of an eye, the number of mind moments of discontinuity, something being in the billions. But who's counting? The fact is that we have somehow laced it together like a strobe light and see it as continuous. And ourselves and everything within it continuous. And we have done this despite evidence to the contrary, and there's considerable evidence to the contrary. But first let me get to the point that in order for the world to be continuous and for us to believe in the continuity, we have to invent time. We have to invent time. Now we think of time as a given. But I will hope to show in this talk that we are in fact are inducing the element of time moment after moment to keep the world continuous, to make it shape up the way our hopes and fears might want it to be. And one of the reasons that we do this is that we want our happiness to be continuous. So if we want our happiness to be continuous, we must make time continuous so that we can have continuous happiness. Right? For duration. We don't want to just be present for a momentary fluctuation of happiness. We want the thing to be prolonged. So in order to prolong it, we have to invent this new invention, wonderful invention called time, and then pursue in time that which we wish our lives to be about. It's a little bit, because every time we invent something, it's a hole shoots out in the dike. You know, it's like you have, so you put your finger in that one, and then it shoots out over there. You put your finger in that, and pretty soon you have 10 fingers and 10 toes and all the holes of the dike, and it's still leaking. And it becomes tedious and difficult to persist in the imaginative adventure that we've all created. And I think we're seeing the leaks of the dike in this age and time. So, this paradigm shift. First, I would like to suggests that science is well ahead of us in our psychological paradigm shift, because it is showing us that time is very inconsistent, not continuous in the same as we have laced it together. In fact, I attended a talk by a physicist who was talking about the relativity of time. The faster you go, the slower time goes. And that some of these astronauts who have gone around the Earth many, many times have actually increased their lifespan by a few minutes. And he took it a little step further. He said, now, if we're sitting in the audience and somebody on the stage is walking back and forth and giving a lecture, that person, although very slow in his movement, is moving, and therefore his time and his moment that he is processing in that moment is different than the moment that you're processing. He's living essentially in a different moment than the one that the audience is because of his movement. So we assume, you see, that we're all together within the same moment in the same time fix. But his suggestion was that it was very different than that. So, and then I was reading a little bit about the American Indians, and there were some cultures within the American Indian population that didn't see time sequentially at all, but rather they would go to the burial grounds of some of their ancestors and do dances on the burial grounds because they wanted to dance literally with their ancestors, not in spirit form. They believed that all time coexisted. And so they could join their ancestors through all of time by this particular ceremonial dance. So I love the fact that different cultures see time in a different way, and that also science is showing us that it's not what we have taken it to be, as some kind of continuous and ongoing, smooth, perceptual thing that's out there doing something to us. It feels like time is somehow external to us, don't we? But it, in fact, it is self-generated, which I want to talk about. But before I do, I want to also mention that in deep, prolonged retreat environments, some people get a sense of the discontinuity of the moment, of the universe, because as they sink more quietly into themselves, this molecular level of discontinuity begins to be perceived. And you begin to feel as if life is coming and going very quickly, sort of like flashes of light in front of your eyes. And it can be very scary when you perceive it at that level of some indication of what the Buddha was talking about when he talked about the arising and passing of consciousness X number of times in a blink of an eye. So this is directly perceivable. It's not something that's imaginative. And it's something that we can get a sense of, and we don't have to go on prolonged retreating to do so, through the awareness of how we bring time into being. Now, two things are going on. When we remake the momentary displays to be continuous, the first thing we are doing, there's two distortions. The first, we are making time continuous when it is, in fact, momentary, when it is arising and falling. Now, why does this seem, and I think this is an important question to ask, why does it seem so consistently there? We wake up to it, we go to sleep with it, all our life seems to be somehow corridored within this frame of time. We count off the days, the weeks, the hours, our watch keeps going around consistently. What's going on there? And why, in fact, does it seem one way, and yet when we perceive it from a point of quiet or stillness, we also recognize that we have kind of created a veneer of time that covers over something that feels far richer than this time frame of reference, and that's the timelessness. The timelessness. That which all spiritual, authentic spiritual practice points towards, the timeless. And yet this veneer of time in the way we perceive life keeps us, somehow keeps us distant from that sense of timelessness, that sense of mystery, which our heart longs for. But all it gets back is this reflective glare of the continuation and continuity of time. And yet we hear the Buddha talking about the deathless and the timeless. Now, where is that timelessness? And is it approachable? Or is it only for the people who have buried themselves on retreat for years at a time in these enclosed caves, and they somehow have access to it that we don't? I would like to suggest that we think time into creation. That the continuity that we give thought is the continuity that we give time. And this is an important point. Whatever is outside of the moment is unreal. It's either here or it's not true. And what we see that happens when we start conjuring up our sense of self-continuity, because a sense of self-continuity, the sense of me continuing in time, of course arises with time. So we keep time in ourselves very full and continuous by the continual thought of me. And that continual thought of me and I and mine holds a kind of protracted view of all the things I've been and done in my life. But those things that I've been and done in my life are not of this moment. Those are things that have been, and our future planning and expectations are things that will be. But those are not of the moment. And everything that is not of the moment has to be questioned as untruth. So we see that we create this sense of thinking about what we have been doing and what we will do as a way to provide us some sense of continuity, some playing field that we can then frolic within. We do it deliberately, so that we can have a sense of ourselves longitudinally, sense of ourselves longitudinal, sense of ourselves. And why do we do that? Because it's fun. Here, with that, I can have play out my desires, right? Unfortunately, we also get our fears. So there's always a downside. There's always a leakage. We don't want it that way, but you can't have it any other. So we get our desires, but then, oh, the leakage is the fears also come. Because once we invite time in, now let's just think, you see, what does he mean? I can play out my desires. Well, the desire that we have isn't of the moment. You desire something that you want to happen, not something that is happening. You see? So it's not true. I want this for myself. I would like this to happen. I wish this to occur. It's a heartfelt wish, perhaps, but it is not of the moment and therefore has to be looked at as being essentially untrue. But we get a chance to do it, and that's what we like. We like the opportunity to play. And there's nothing more fascinating than to be able to play with our consciousness, within our imagination, because our desires can allow us to be anything, grab anything, become anything, own anything. And the imagination opens up a world that the moment doesn't seem to fulfill, does it? And so we create time so that we can desire. And we create desire to be fulfilled. And we create fulfillment continuously so that we will have purpose and meaning for our life. So we start looking at what it is, what it means to be fulfilled, which is what we want from our desires, and we see that the fulfillment that the desire promises isn't lasting. Uh-oh, there's a big hole in the dike. And we go, my God, this isn't working. You see, the leaks, the messages, the feedback of this imaginative thing that we have created called our life is coming back in us all the time. But we just keep putting the whole, well, I didn't try hard enough, or I didn't have the right circumstances, or the ingredients weren't right for the soup. That's why it's off. So we put our hand in the dike hole, forcing that coverage of where it can't possibly satisfy to be our fault, and I'll continue to try to satisfy through that way, and we then pursue our next desire. In fact, most of us don't even really ask the question whether our desires produce the payoff we wanted. We assume, of course they will. Just haven't tried hard enough and found the right ingredients. Of course they will. Look at everybody else. Look at the CEOs. Look at the $250 million that somebody gets for being a CEO of one of these firms. If I could do that. It's so interesting. Does it, you see? Because in truth, once we acquire something, we bring it into the moment. It's no longer outside of the moment as a fictional representation and untrue. Once we bring it into the moment, it becomes the truth of the moment and can't withstand or hold up under the pressure, under the unreal expectation that we had of it, which is that it would continuous. Because now it's of the moment, it has to abide within the laws of the moment, which are what? Impermanent. And it falls apart. But in our mind, when we were pursuing it, it wasn't like that. We thought it could really be prolonged and satisfying. But that's unreal because it's not of the moment. Once something comes into the moment, this moment, the one that we're living in now, this is the only way to challenge something. Does the payoff work? Is it worth it? Is it worth it? To ask that question, is it worth it? And the other thing that's interesting enough as we create time through our thinking is that we suddenly realize that we're also creating our aging and our death. In the moment, listen carefully, aging is not. Death is not. But in our mind, once we create time, that's another leak in the dike. That's the dead pitfall of thinking in this fashion, is that suddenly there's a hole in the dike called aging and death. But in this moment, right now, here and now, in this moment, where reality is, exists, what is aging? It's just the expression of life in this moment. It has no context to aging at all. Aging can only be seen in relationship to what I've been in my youth. But in this moment, where is aging? See, in the truth of things, when we bring it under the correct lens, put it in the correct paradigm, suddenly we can ask very valid questions of assumptions that we've made in an imaginative world that any law, you can allow it to be governed by any law. But in this circumstance, it's governed by the laws. And that's very sobering to do. And all the Buddha is asking us really is to bring the reference here and now. See if it holds up. Okay, this is what you wanted. This is what you've spent your whole life for. Bring it into the moment and ask yourself the sobering question whether the payoff is worth the price of the pursuit. hand, why have we pursued life? Because we've created time, the field of time to play within so that we can pursue it. All self-creation, my friends. Very sobering to see life in that description. But very important for us to do as a group, as a sangha. Because here we can cuddle together and go, whoa. What is outside of the moment is unreal and invalidated by its very definition. Because it isn't here. It doesn't exist. But why do we do this? We do it because in the field of time, it gives us some sense of reliability, some sense of forethought. We can think our way into the next arrangement of the moment, and we can make it steady and consistent, or seem to be able to make it steady and consistent. It never quite holds up. It's always a little bit off from what we wanted it to happen, but we keep trying to shore it up so that the moment expresses itself in some way, in some, within the parameters of what our expectations were. And as I mentioned, we get a medium called time in which we can play out our desires and sustain our desires. Although as soon as you have a desire, by definition you have its downside called fear. Because as soon as we allow our mind to move out to what we want, in that moment there's also the fear of not getting what we want. You can't have what you want imaginatively and not have the corresponding backlash of fearing that you're not going to get what you want, which is also in time. You create one, we create the other by definition. But we have psychologists to go to cure that. Right? So we do fear therapies and do all the things so we can try to get life back adjusted so that we can have what we want without the fear. It's impossible. By definition, it's impossible. See, okay, so enough on that one. What's the second distortion? The second way we distort the momentary display and time within it. How do we distort the moment and time? And the second way we do that is that we force time to be outside of ourself, acting on us, and we're not a part of it. Doesn't it feel like time is acting on you, that somehow it's external, that you didn't do anything and you just seem to be aging and it's acting on me, and if we could just figure out some way to crawl in and to escape it, it seems like we could do so. And this, we force time to be separate from us because our thoughts are separate from us. Remembering that time is created by our thinking, and may I add that so are we, the sense of me is created by our thinking. So we have thoughts that cannot be reconciled by being connected. Thoughts can't connect. Thoughts are isolated from one another through their words. And so it feels as if, since we've created this sense of time through our thinking about the past and about the future, that the sense of me, also created by thought, seems to be outside, separated from this sense of time, and both of us, all of us, are separated somehow, just distant, just outside the moment. And Buddhism is an attempt to get back into the moment. And we feel as if we're outside it because we have invested in our thinking, which is outside of it. Remember, anything that's outside of the moment, by its very nature, must be unreal. And our thoughts, because they hold the sense of time within them, and the moment does not, hold time. The moment only holds the timeless. But as long as we think ourselves through this moment, into the future, from the past, and on we go, then we don't care about the timeless. In fact, what's that? What good is that? We want what the field of time will allow us, which is to play upon our desires. So this second distortion is very important, because the downside of it, and I like to talk about what we get from doing this, and also how the leakage of the dikes, because there's always both. We have to be aware of the downside, the limitation of our imaginative life, is that we are lonely and separate and distant and wanting. We crave the future. We crave the play of the imagination. The future holds our salvation. The future holds contentment. The future holds everything. This moment holds nothing. Because I've never lived within it, abided within the real, I'm constantly creating through expectations of my desires. My desires never really pay off in terms of contentment. They lead more into more futuristic expectations, more that I have to do in order for me to be content. And we play this game in ourselves, and we really, it's like running a marathon. We are winded by the time we reach a certain age. We're exhausted. And it's because we've held ourselves in isolation from other people, we don't see that everybody is exhausted. We have a room full of exhausted people. Which is why you come to something like this. Because it's only when you're exhausted, you're finished running, you can't go any further, that you want to turn this paradigm shift around. It doesn't work. If it worked, great. I'd be the first one. I'd lead us all on a big desire hunt. And it starts imploding. And the leaks in the dike start rushing. The water starts rushing faster than our arms and hands can fill them. And the downside, we can't believe that there was ever an upside, because we're just getting flooded here. I.e. the particular display of the earth in this moment has held the imaginative lives of 6 billion people. And in an evolutionary nanosecond, i.e. the last 1,000 years, really, since the industrial, all of this, all of a sudden it's exhausted. We've exhausted the earth when we've exhausted ourselves. So we're all very sober. This is a beautiful time, and I think the forces of life have set this stage now for the readiness of people to feel exhausted, which is the all-important first step to turning this paradigm, making this paradigm shift. But you have to do it. You have to be willing to look. You can't just be exhausted and say, well, I'm going to die exhausted. Use it now to resupply your energy. Come into the moment and relook at this thing from the critical eye of reality rather than from the longing of our desire. All we have to do is be willing to see now, not then or will be or has been. Not textual reading, not informational reading, not knowledge base, which is all longitudinal learning. The learning of now. The learning within now. And by separating time outside of ourselves and outside of this moment, which is the only place in it can exist, we have made time into a product. In fact, we talk about wasting time and saving time like it was something that we could collect. And may I say that one of the downsides of working life in this kind of way is that we begin to fracture time. Now let me just talk for a moment or two about how we fracture time and fracture our life. Because we do this on an ongoing basis and we don't even realize it. We think that time can be compartmentalized. So that there's work time, and then there's commuting time, and then there's home time, and then there is sleep time. And at home time, we've compartmentalized time with our family and time alone, perhaps, or reading time or something. And so we have these little markers that we have set up in ourselves, like little bookmarks every few chapters of our life, every few moments of our life, in which something defined and compartmentalized. This time is for work. The problem is that these times don't, because time isn't compartmentalized and can't be, they start intruding upon one another. Suddenly, you're at home and away from work, and you get a call about work. And you get infuriated that they would interrupt your home time as if it were compartmental and segmented away from the rest of your life. And they're not respecting that. And these things start intruding upon themselves, and we get very upset as these different compartments start overlapping and touching one another. We feel indignant. How could he, the boss, call me again? Why doesn't he know this is my... And we do it with vacation time, and we just do it. And so then we have a period of time, some of us, hopefully, called alone time. And that alone time we set up with its own environment, with my Zafu and my little timer. And nobody better come in and disrupt that alone time. And suddenly your child comes in. And you feel upset again because this time was intruded on as well. And yet the very process of meditation is to release those partitions, is to find the fluidity of experience in the now, not separating ourselves out or time out from us. So that our child comes in and the child is embraced. The child is embraced and the child leaves. The child leaves and we sit. As we sit, the phone rings. We pick up the phone and it's our boss. And we talk to our boss. And we put the phone back up and then we sit again. And there is no time that is not our time. Because we have not separated or segmented ourselves away from anything. From the flow of life, the movement of life has not been compartmentalized or regionalized or fractured in any way whatsoever. Said in a different way, there is no other time but now. And whatever happens in now and our appropriate response to now will always be meditative. Cannot be otherwise. But set up what we want to happen, meaning time, as opposed to what is happening, meaning the present moment, then we will have many more moments in which we are not meditating because we are going to be perturbed because the moment has not extended itself in the way that we had expected. And how can it? How can it possibly follow? How can reality follow our desires? How can that possibly happen? How is it that we can have lived this long and not have seen that? That it is impossible for reality to follow our desires. And yet, most of us invest so heavily in the desire factor and so lightly in the reality factor. We touch it once in a while. We catch our breath for a moment or two. And say we had a successful meditation. When all around us, it has never for one moment left us. And all we have to do is to concede that point. That's it, really. And we're home free. And what does conceding that point mean? Is that we move through the veneer of time. To something far richer than anything time could have ever allowed our lives to become. And why and how could that possibly be frightening? When it is here all the time. If it was something we had to add, it would be very frightening. It would be like, I can't trust that. But here it is, it's been here all the time. We've been trusting, we've been walking on it. We just haven't been noticing what we've been walking upon. We've been walking on the timeless, thinking about time. As if we could ever get away from it. All we have to do is concede that point, release the need to suspend ourselves within the framework of time, and the moment catches us. It doesn't catch us as some because we've fallen off of a tightrope. It catches us because that's where we've always been. It opens up to us, you might say. And time is no more thought of as a friend and an enemy. A friend when it abides comfortably within the pleasant expectations that we have projected, and an enemy when it does not. When it's difficult, time is, we become impatient, which is the embodiment of time. Impatient. Get over this. And when we are serene and the moment is in its right orientation, we can be content. See how the meditation is helping me? Look how content I am. Change the circumstances and we become impatient again. We're still embedded in time. It's just that sometimes it's friendly and sometimes it's not. I don't like something that turns on me that. Would you have a neighbor that sometimes would bring you food and the next meal would be poison? Would you eat it? We are not separate from time. Listen carefully. 3 o'clock is not where we'll be at 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock is where we are when the clock rings 3. We could never get out of time. Time is and has always been of the moment in the timeless. The clock keeps striking, but it doesn't disrupt anything that is here and now. But we don't want to see it as whole for some reason, for whatever, I don't really understand why. We want to keep parceling things up so that we can't just open up to the whole thing in one fell swoop. And I think it's because most of us still caught in time are afraid, which is time. We lead with our fear rather than with the promise. And so we move with trepidation, which is time, to try to come to the timeless. And so we're using time to get to the timeless. But time can never take us to the timeless. It can just take us to more fear and more desire. Until we reach a moment in which we're willing to even allow fear to be fully present. And then it's shattered forever, like a crystal glass. And so then we have stopped struggling with time. and we sit. And when things come, yes, hello, how are you? Yes, mm-hmm, yes, nice to see you. Yes, see you later. Okay. And we can use it very conventionally. It's not as if we don't have access to the conventional use of time. We do have access to the conventional use of time. It's just that we don't invest in that belief because we've taken our seat timelessly. And that's where the calling of the Buddha is asking us to come. Thank you. Can we sit for a minute or two? Sit timelessly. Don't keep checking out your thoughts for the content of where you need to go or what you've been. What does that have to do with this moment? If you believe in that, ask yourself where the truth resides. Where does the truth reside? Within the fabrication of the mind's time frame? If it's not of the moment, question it. Because everything is of the moment. Okay, I took you on a little journey for that talk. I wanted to do that. I hope we were all together. If there are any questions or comments, I'd be happy to. Yes?
You just said something about 3 o'clock.
Yes.
That sounded so
I said something about 3 o'clock. The question is, would I repeat it because it sounded so, I don't know her adjective, but I will assume that it was something good. We think of time as an external event. That's what I was saying. Something outside happening to us, right? That we have to be somewhere at 3 o'clock. As if 3 o'clock were something that was going to happen. But 3 o'clock in reality is where you are when the clock strikes 3. It's not a destination. It's not another time frame. In fact, to think of time as being like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, tomorrow morning, any time frame is just induced with our thinking. Right? So when you begin to see that we've inducted ourselves into this whole reference, this whole paradigm of time, then you want to know, where's this discontinuous universe the Buddha is talking about? And by discontinuous doesn't mean that there isn't something true here. It's showing that everything that is not true will be discontinuous. So we look for the one thing that is continuous to find what is true. And that cannot be found within our thinking paradigm. We have to start with this moment and move from there, asking very relevant and honest questions, sincere questions, within this moment to begin to discern the true orientation in relationship to what reality is. We can't just assume time is true. We have to look at the very basis, the very assumptions we have made to form this paradigm, not just assume that those assumptions are true and continue within the paradigm, and then ask truths within that paradigm to try to question it. You can't do that. You have to ask truths that actually hold the paradigm together about it. What is this thing? Because it's all based on time. We just assume it's true. I have to be there at 3 o'clock. God, it's 20 minutes to 3. I've got to hurry to get there when the clock strikes. Are you getting a sense of this? Just give me some sense that you're getting a sense. Just a little. Like maybe it's a ghost story to you. And you think, whoa, something out, yeah, whoa. Not sure I want to listen to the conclusion, but... Yes?
Where does the idea of karma fit in the sense of, you know, not like reincarnation and everything, but just the operation of cause and effect?
Yes.
One moment, yes. In the next moment?
Yes. Okay, the question is, where does the idea of karma, one moment conditioning the next moment? Well, let's look at it. Let's look at karma from this moment, which is where we have to look at it from, not some... Because if we throw it out into reincarnations, we've assumed the paradigm of time. Let's look at what it means in this moment. And as we sit, you can feel the past way that we have used time continuing to generate its impulse to continue in that direction. You can see the reactions or old expectations. You can see the desires continuing. And as we sit, we see the impulses of our karma, of what we have taken life to be, coming through our consciousness as like little startups, like little false starts, saying, you know, you've got to hurry, you better get going. All those messages that we have believed and obeyed and add momentum to within the paradigm of time, when we are sitting in meditation, which is the timeless, those false starts continue to... That's our karma. You see? That's it. Deal with it as an experience within life. And you can see that you can run with your karma because those are very convincing messages and reassume the paradigm again. I have to hurry. And get lost in the panic of the situation and then continue the karma. Or you can hold the karma in the timeless, feeling like starting an old lawnmower, but one of those old cars that you turn, you know, you crank it, but it turns, and you feel like it, but it doesn't start. It doesn't get you going. And that's the end of karma. That's putting karma to the end by holding it within the timeless. It's the only way, the timeless being awareness, it's the only way to end karma. You can't end karma by adding more time to it or deviating and say, okay, well now I'm just not going to rush anymore, because then you've just created the reaction to time of not rushing rather than rushing. You just substituted eggs for apples or oranges or something. And timeless doesn't substitute anything. So deal with meditation from the moment. Ask questions about karma from the moment. Yes, and there are cosmological discussions and philosophical discussions and all of those things about how this moment does that to this next moment and then this arises and that. But what difference does it make to the consciousness and to your liberation within that consciousness? What difference does that make? Because if you can't see it now, it ain't valuable. It's what is happening now and my ability to attune to what is going on now and attune and hold what it is that's going on that is the only avenue to liberation. And you can have fun with the other. talking about reincarnation and the lives of the Buddha and Jataka tales and all that. But what difference does it make to you? What difference does it make to your liberation? You can have fun with it, like you go to the movies and talk about it, and that's fine. But what difference does it make to your liberation? The question we have to ask, if we're serious, is what difference does this make to my freedom? And the question of reincarnation doesn't make a bit of difference to your freedom. Whether you've had 10,000 lifetimes or this is the only lifetime. Because now does not change. Whether you've lived 10,000 lifetimes of now or this is the only one. This is what we have to deal with. And this is the sobering reality. This is the laboratory. This is where it all occurs. This is where we can make it work or not work. And as soon as we get lost in the philosophical dialogues of the Buddha, when he was asked those questions, he just shut up. He said, this is insanity. I'm not going. Are there many people would come to him and say, are there many lifetimes or one lifetime? Is this going to all end? Or is this going to continue? Or they would just ask all these philosophical, just endless things. And he just, the golden silence, the thunderous silence. Because enough. You see how we can use the very systems that lead to freedom for more extensions, for a little longer life within this paradigm. And Buddhism, believe me, is full of extensions. Isn't it? It doesn't mean you can't have fun with them, enjoy them, read your, do all the things, get in debates, because it's fun, it's enjoyable, but know the difference. Don't take it seriously. Not where your freedom is. This is far too precious. Yes, sir.
I once was sitting on a bus seat.
I didn't hear that.
I said I once was sitting on a bus seat in a remote village. In a bus, one bus had dropped me off, and this next bus that I was sitting in was going to take me to the next place. And the whole bus was full of passengers, but there was no driver. And I found myself tearing at time. Where is the bus driver? When are we going to leave? And then at one point it dawned on me that the bus was going to leave when it was going to leave.
He tells the story of being on a bus with a lot of people and no driver, and being very exasperated by the fact there wasn't any driver, and finally realized that this bus was never going to leave until it left. And so that you came to the end of time in that moment, if I could just frame it in a different way.
Sense the crack in time.
Yes. Yes. A sense of crack in the crack in time. Yes, sir.
On the one hand, I sense the eternal now and the untruth of length of time. On the other hand, I was thinking as you were speaking about fears and fear of death, and thinking there's one thing I'm quite certain of, and that at some point his body will die.
Yes.
And that that is that exists in time. It's not happening in this moment.
Yes.
And it feels that if it feels useful to embrace that.
Yes.
As opposed to say, oh, that doesn't exist. It's a
perception. Yes. Yes. Yes.
And I was wondering how you work with
yes.
the knowledge of this moment as being the infinite present. And with the stuff that exists in time,
yes,
you just need to work with this.
Absolutely. So the question is having to work with the timeless now, and how do we work with death, which seems very relevant and very important to a kind of urgency. And may I say that most of those are skillful means to break the paradigm of time. Within the paradigm of time, death is very real, and aging is very real. and yet I'm going to die, you know, as a realization. Impermanence is a realization. And those things begin to show you that where we have invested our energy and our hope within this paradigm is not going to pay off because we're going to die. And therefore the paradigm is flawed, hopelessly flawed. And so at that point you say, maybe I need to get, is there a way to step out of this? Which is what the Buddha did when he went on his chariot ride and saw people dying. He says, whoa, my paradigm didn't, whoa, this is a, I got to know this, you see. And so it can lead to a shift of urgency to find something that is deathless. Is deathless. Now, when I say, time and the timeless, I'm really suggesting not that we don't respect time, but that we have it as a relativity rather than an absolute. So let me say, yes, I'll see you again, as a relative statement. We say, here's another word, I, based on time, is a relative statement. You don't forget your name and just, you know, or things still make sense in the paradigm of time, which it has to for us to be able to function and move around the world. But we don't invest in that paradigm as the absolute truth of our being. So there's a coexistent factor. There's what coexists is the time with the timeless. The timeless holds the time. We don't deny time. We just allow it to be held. And what holds it is more substantial than what is being held. You see? And so then we say, okay, the body's going to die. Body is going to die. That's relatively true. And if there's any residual part of me that still invests in the paradigm of time, then we start looking at frantically, you know, my body, oh my God, I'm really invested in my body. Okay, so then we start working on those painful issues, and pain is always the source, is the indicator that we've invested in the wrong paradigm. So if we look at the pain of where we're holding our lives, we realize we're investing in the wrong paradigm, and we can work with that and come to this place of the timeless holding time. And that's what the whole thing is about. It's not just to be in your timeless, absolute position where it's all illusion, no time, and to hell with all the people who are out on the street, they're all illusion too, right? That's so silly. I hope that you see. That's not a realization. That's a philosophy. And timelessness does not work philosophically. It works as a realized truth only. So you don't. I don't have quote time for that. Okay. Thank you all. Thank you.